Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Tuesday live in Los Angeles. This is the Herd, wherever you may be, however you may be listening. We're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, the Herd hierarchy. What do we do with the Packers? What do we do with the Cowboys? What do we do with the Chiefs? Herd hierarchy, top 10 teams in the league. We give it a lot of thought. In 1 hour, and Joy Taylor is joining me after a controversial finish last night in Monday Night Football, which turned out to be a great game.
It was a great game, but I do feel very badly for the Lions.
I do, too. Here's what's interesting about this. The nation freaked out. The owners freaked out. America freaked out when the New Orleans Saints, there was a really bad call against the Rams in the NFC Championship. And the Saints certainly played the victim very well. But the thing about that bad call is there were three opportunities for the Saints after that call to win the game. Okay? After that bad call, Saints kick a field goal. The Rams got the ball back in regulation, drove all the way down the field. Saints defense couldn't stop them. Kick a field goal, send it to overtime. So the Saints defense could have won the game. Then we go to overtime in the Superdome. The Saints offense gets the ball. They throw a pick. And then the Saints defense takes the field. And the Rams drive down and kick a field goal, win the game. Three opportunities. Now, the Saints play the victim. The owners wanted to support the Saints. And, oh, my God, can't believe. But the Saints had three opportunities to win that game. Their defense had two, and Drew Brees and the offense had one. I'm not saying the call was good. It was bad. But bad things happen in games, and bad things happen in life. Are you given opportunities to overcome bad things? Saints got three, couldn't do it. Last night, Detroit didn't, due to a bad call, have any opportunities. Their offense sat and watched. Their special team sat and watched. And their defense made the stop. Bad call. Watched Green Bay bleed the clock. So I feel very bad. I feel worse for Detroit than I do for New Orleans because Detroit didn't have any time to overcome it. And this begs the question for this caper. How do you solve it? I think the way to solve it is really, really, really easy. For the 276th time, the umbrella rule. The umbrella rule, which means 2 minutes left in any NFL game, everything is reviewable. Everything. It's the NFL's insurance policy that instead of this nonsense the Rams-Saints game created, which is now we're going to review every pass interference call, which has been a debacle. The last 25 reviewed PI calls, 24 are unchanged. Nobody wants to change it. It's nonsense. There's a reason for 100 years in football we didn't have it. And now they bring it in because everybody freaked out because New Orleans complained enough. And it was a bad call in New Orleans. But in the end, that's nonsense. What's not nonsense is insurance. It's the first thing you buy when you have a car and the first thing you buy when you have a home. And you buy insurance because insurance is like replays in sports. It's best used rarely, but it's used in case of dire consequences and an emergency, an earthquake, a flood, a car wreck, or a really egregious call with 42 seconds left in the game and everybody just has to watch the clock bleed. I don't think it's hard to figure out. Listen, these replays, we all agree, they take a lot of time and add it to games. We all acknowledge that sometimes they kill the pace of a game. I've always thought replays are innately unfair. Because sports is so much about momentum, especially in football, the big hit, the big sack, the big interception. Then you go to replay, takes 2.5 minutes, the crowd simmers down. It's a momentum killer. And in certain sports, I mean, you watch football, you watch NBA basketball, the big block, the big dunk. The last thing you want is 2.5 minutes in a replay just kills the momentum. So I'm not a huge fan of replays, but I do believe in certain instances, end of games, there should be a big insurance policy called the umbrella review. I don't think it's terribly difficult to figure out. I don't know why they haven't figured it out. But that's where we stand this morning. The pass interference nonsense due to the Saints-Rams ending is a debacle. Bad calls happen. Denver lost a game this year against Chicago on a bad call. In fact, you can argue Denver's lost two games on iffy calls. So let me segue from that, my umbrella policy, my umbrella insurance reviewable policy, to this. You do realize this was the classic Matt Stafford game. The worst part about Matt Stafford, boy, he looks the part. He's a handsome quarterback, got a nice arm, makes beautiful throws, sees the field. You're like, man, guy, good. I like Matt Stafford. But last night, 3-for-13 on third down, 1-for-3 in the red zone. Classic Matt Stafford. 11 years in the NFL, he does not have a signature win. And in the second half, 6 possessions, punt, field goal, punt, field goal, punt. It's the kind of game Russell Wilson wins. It's the kind of game Tom Brady always wins. And it's the type of game Detroit and Matt Stafford always lose. In 11 years in that division, I want you to think about this. Mitch Trubisky has won that division. Case Keenum has won that division. Jay Cutler has won that division. Teddy Bridgewater has won that division. Aaron Rodgers, overwhelmingly with bad defenses, has won that division 5 times. Matt Stafford's never won that division. You can blame the refs last night, but in the second half, it was punting and field goals, and they couldn't do anything in the red zone and anything on third down. And I don't want to hear about defense. Detroit's defense stifled Green Bay in the first half. Detroit's defense got 2 turnovers. Detroit was up 13-0. He had all sorts of help last night. When you go to Lambeau and you can shut down Aaron Rodgers for the first quarter and a half of a football game, that's all you're going to get from your defense. You cannot ask to shut Aaron Rodgers down for 4 quarters. There are times you can't shut Aaron Rodgers down for a quarter. The defense did a great job for Detroit early in that football game. They came in with a great game plan. They jumped out to a big lead. He got to play ahead instead of like Dak Prescott always playing from behind. Matt Stafford had the lead on the road. The crowd got quieter because you take the crowd out of the game with a lead. So, and with Matt Stafford, he always looks the part. That's the difficult thing. Like Andy Dalton just doesn't have the arm, right? Like Andy Dalton, you're like, well, he just doesn't have the arm. Kirk Cousins doesn't have the size of the arm. When you look at Matt Stafford, there was a very interesting moment early in the game. And this kind of sums up Stafford. First play of the game, they come out and they do a flea flicker. And Matt Stafford throws an absolutely beautiful ball. I mean, this is how you teach quarterbacks to throw. Look at that thing. It's like velvety smooth. And you're like, ah, oh, look at this. And yet, here's this 11-year veteran on the very next play. After this, I mean, this is just classic, beautiful, perfect. It's like video game quality. Next play, fumbles a snap. When's the last time Brady fumbled a snap? Next play, and then all of a sudden they sell for a field goal. Like, that's Matt Stafford. It's like, it's always just this close. And this game, he got 2 fumbles. His team gave him an interception. He got a big lead. The defensive game plan was great. And the last 6 possessions, punt, field goal, punt, field goal, punt. So we can blame the officials, but this has come to define the Matt Stafford era. Looks the part, but why do they always lose these games? And why does Russell Wilson and Tom Brady always win them? There's something called it. Some people have it, some people don't have it, some people look the part, some people can't deliver. And that was, I was sitting there watching that game last night. My first thing is, you know, he doesn't have a signature win in 11 years. I think this is going to be it. I thought this is going to be it. They finally have the coach. They've got some nice, not great, but nice little pieces. Rookie tight end's good. They have a good receiver. They have a nice young back. They've got the coach. They got a couple of really nice corners. You're like, okay, this is going to be the signature win. And it ended up being exactly, seemingly, what every time Detroit has a chance to win a huge game, they always come up short for the last 11 years. By the way, Detroit has led every game in the fourth quarter. You know what their record is? 2-2-1. Blame who you want. It's quarterback league.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
The NFL is, what it's really about is overcoming it. We can make excuses for Cam Newton and Andy Dalton and Matt Stafford and Kirk Cousins. This is about overcoming. average quarterbacks can't overcome. They need everything to be right. Great quarterbacks overcome stuff. So I'll give you three examples. Aaron Rodgers is now 2-0 in the last 2 weeks without Devontae Adams. Last night, he also had to overcome two lost fumbles, an interception, which should have been a touchdown, but the wide receiver bobbled it and Detroit picked it off. And then he lost Geronimo Allison during the game. Okay, all you want to talk about is the bad call Matt Stafford dealt with. Aaron Rodgers lost his best receiver, arguably his second best receiver, had a touchdown pass bobbled and turned into a Detroit interception, and there's two fumbles. By the way, Russell Wilson won this weekend. He's lost Doug Baldwin, his most trusted receiver. His number two receiver now is a rookie who dropped in the draft, and during the game Sunday, he lost his top tight end, and he won on the road. And Tom Brady is 6-0 using a collection of wide receivers who are undrafted, rookies. One of them played corner back in college. Overcome it. Overcome it. Okay, quarterbacks make their weapons. If your weapons are making your quarterback, you have what's known as Dak Prescott, which is certainly good enough to win games. And Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott, you can have good Sundays. You can win divisions. But if you want to win at the highest level, Aaron's got a Super Bowl, Tom's got a bunch, and Russell Wilson has one, you got to have somebody that can overcome stuff. And if you look at last night and you really talk about who had to overcome things, Green Bay's defense got worked for a quarter and a half. Two fumbles. Drop touchdown becomes a pick. Lost his top receiver. And then arguably, Geronimo Allison is his second receiver. And here's what Aaron Rodgers does. He goes to the sideline. He said, let's put number 13 in. It's Alan Lazard. He didn't even call him by name to the staff. He's like, you know, he's been pretty good at practice. He's got a locker by me. Let's put number 13 in. And, of course, you saw the throw. Here's Aaron after.
I may have put in a good word there in the fourth quarter to get him some opportunities. The thing that that got me was what you love as a quarterback, and that's when your receiver's coming back and telling you he wants the ball and what routes he wants to run. You know, the big first down we had to him on the out route, that was him coming back in the huddle telling me what play he wanted. And for a young guy to do that, how can he not have confidence in that?
I got to tell you, this will be one of the more forgettable games for Aaron Rodgers, right? This is when I love Aaron Rodgers. This was really impressive to me. He didn't have anything go right last night. Good God, he threw a touchdown pass. The receiver bobbled it, and they picked it off. Two fumbles. Lost his best receiver, his second best wide receiver. He had to play from behind 13-0, which is always absolutely a disadvantage when you're playing from behind. The crowd was out of the game. I was totally impressed with Aaron Rodgers last night. This is the kind of game that nobody talks about at the end of the year, but this league has been defined by overcoming stuff. Russell Wilson this year, Tom Brady this year, and Aaron Rodgers this year have separated. Hey, Patrick Mahomes, I don't want to hear about it. Deshaun Watson's winning with no offensive line till 2 weeks ago. I like Patrick Mahomes. I don't want to hear about Tyreek Hill. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about the injuries. Because I watched what Aaron did last night, and that was really impressive. Hey, coach, put number 13 in. Didn't even know his name, apparently.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So I'm going to read this. These are only facts. In fact, I'm strongly considering turning this show just facts, no opinions. Facts. Baker Mayfield this season, less passing touchdowns than Mason Rudolph, less passing yards than Andy Dalton, lower completion percentage than the recently cut Luke Falk, lower quarterback rating than Eli Manning, and the most interceptions in the NFL. That's with a star running back to star receivers and a defense that gets him the ball back. Of course, the only way to solve this, it could not be Baker's fault, right? So now I'm going to go into the opinion thing. It's to fire Freddie Kitchens. I go to Twitter over the weekend. Oh, it's Freddie Kitchens. It is Freddie Kitchens. Okay, so let's solve it by firing Freddie Kitchens. So that will mean Baker will be on his fourth head coach in 19 games. Yeah, that's the answer. And his third play caller in under 2 years. So let's just fire him this week. Fourth head coach, 19 games. So that's the answer. Let me ask you this, and do you know why Tom Hanks gets the best scripts? He doesn't deal with Porky's Four. Tom Hanks only gets the best scripts. Why do the richest guys in Silicon Valley get the first crack at the best startups like Uber? Because great people with a track record of success have options in life. If you fire Freddie Kitchens, best guy in the market, Rex Ryan, did you see what he did with quarterbacks? When you keep firing people over and over and over and over, it sends a message to the industry. Toxic, stay away. Jimmy Haslam, stay away. All of you suggesting you fire Freddie Kitchens are out of your mind. That would be the sixth head coach in 7 years if you fired him under Jimmy Haslam. And let me ask you this. Not only wouldn't you get an elite coach, what kind of staff could a Rex Ryan get? I mean, again, Tom Hanks only gets the best scripts. So you're going to get a coach that's probably been fired, often multiple times, and then he's going to have to put a staff together. To get my wife, and it's not like Cleveland's a desirable place to live, to get my wife, any job I take, I got to sell my wife first. I got to sell my wife and my kids. So the idea that you could hire a coach after Freddie Kitchens and then he'd hire 17 assistants and you'd get an elite assistant staff. No. The top 10 special teams coaches are not taking the job. The top 8 to 10 defensive coordinators either have now head coaching jobs or not taking the job. So this idea, the answer in Cleveland is always fire the head coach. The problem is you get left with Freddie Kitchens as a head coach. That's who's available. So if that's what you think, I said day one, if Baker Mayfield succeeds in this league, and I've said from day one, he is a franchise quarterback, I don't think he'll be a bust. He's too accurate of a thrower. But if he succeeds, he's going to have to overcome organizational chaos, and I am already right on that. He's already on his third coach 19 games in. You want it to be his fourth. So this is what I don't understand. Like, we're all sending messages. Our hygiene sends messages, our haircut, our dress. Did you brush your teeth? Do you smell okay? All of us are sending messages every day in our lives. How we dress, how we look, how we talk, how we verbalize. What do we like in the room? What is the message you are sending to the industry of football coaches and top scouts if you run out Jimmy Haslam? You're going to give a guy 6-7 games? I mean, in my opinion, you got to give Freddie Kitchen 2 years. You got to give him 32 games. It's why when I said be careful about firing Hugh Jackson, let me ask you today, are you sure Freddie Kitchens is better than Hugh Jackson? And I said, be careful about firing Hugh Jackson. Whether or not he's the right coach, he's an offensive coach, he's an adult, he's been a coach, just let him get through the season with Baker Mayfield. You know, I don't care what the record is. You weren't going to make the playoffs with Baker last year, but you just ran him off, and then it's Greg Williams, and then you offend this guy, and now Greg's actually with a team that's got real players and feels great about themselves this morning, and you got a coach you want to run off. And it's just a mess. It's just, that is not the answer. You're sending a terrible message to the coaching fraternity if you fire Freddie Kitchens. This is just on Baker. Stop making excuses. If Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Russell Wilson can overcome what they're overcoming, I don't want to hear about that thing Sunday. That was a mess. He's a mess. Baker's a mess right now. That's just, stop with the offensive line. He had nothing but time to throw the ball Sunday. Okay, Russell Wilson was under much more duress from Cleveland's D-line than Baker was under with Seattle's D-line. Baker had plenty of time to throw.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
Minnesota, and they're actually now becoming a very easy team to figure out. When they play a good defense, Kirk Cousins is 0-2 with a quarterback rating of 73. When they play a bad defense, Kirk Cousins is 4-0 with a quarterback rating of 135.8. It's real simple. Kirk Cousins is limited, and when you put a fearsome pass rush and a top secondary against them, he's not very good. But Philadelphia had back-end issues, and he looked great. Delvin Cook, by the way, is a monster. He's being overshadowed by Christian McCaffrey. Dalvin Cook right now, to me, is the first or second best running back in this league. We're just talking so much about McCaffrey, and they've got such great receivers in Minnesota. We forget about Dalvin Cook. He's having a monster year.
Number 9.
Kansas City. You complained last week when I had them like 7. Their defense has spent an average of 38 minutes on the field in the last 2 games. They can't get people off the field. And by the way, I like Patrick Mahomes, but this is the first time in his career, Joy, he's having to overcome stuff like injuries, and he's struggled with it. So he's completing last 3 games 56% of his throws. That's with Travis Kelce. That's with Andy Reid. So listen, Wilson, Brady, Aaron Rodgers have spent years having to overcome injuries. So Mahomes now for the first time has to overcome some stuff, and he has regressed. Doesn't mean he's not great. It doesn't mean he won't get good again. But this is the growth of young quarterbacks. You come out, you blow everybody away. Oh, you take away this guy. You take away that guy. That guy's hurt. And Mahomes has pulled back. Kansas City at 9.
Number 8.
I think Buffalo does have a ceiling offensively. They are so good, though, situationally. The number that jumps out to me, they've had 14 red zone trips this year, and they've scored 10 touchdowns. So that is a team. The play calling's good. They went in the offseason, and they upgraded their offensive line. And I like their staff last year, and I like their defense, but their offensive line has taken all that chaos and all that inconsistency last year and just pulled it down a little bit. It's a great defense, a great staff, a limited offense, but a pretty good situational offense in Buffalo at number 8.
Number 7.
Carolina. Again, I think Kyle Allen has some limitations, but let's be honest, the defense right now, again, another Ron Rivera defense, most sacks in the NFL and tied for the second most takeaways. This is what Ron Rivera does. He gives Cam Newton, or whoever the quarterback is, he's like, listen, I'm going to give you a top 10 defense. And in the NFL, if you have a top defense and you're a top quarterback, you generally have a winning record. Add to the fact they've drafted very well at wide receiver and at running back with Christian McCaffrey. Kyle Allen is now one of 4 undefeated quarterbacks in the NFL. Brady, Garoppolo, Bridgewater, and Kyle Allen. Carolina 7.
Number 6.
This is mostly Russell Wilson. He's just great. He leads the NFL in passer rating, second in passing touchdowns, second in completion percentage. Oh, yeah, no interceptions. And Chris Carson has become a complete workhorse at running back, that 7th round pick. He's 2nd in the league in carries, 5th in yards. But this is really about Russell Wilson. He is situationally the most unique quarterback I've ever seen. He's a pocket passer, yet a playmaker, yet sometimes a running quarterback. Doug Baldwin retired, and I said on the air, the defense is too young. Doug Baldwin's retired. I don't love their offensive line. I think they could be an 8-8 team. And then Russell Wilson just happened to have the greatest year of his career, and they're a 5-1 team.
Number 5.
Or number 6. Green Bay is at 5. I think we saw them last night. They're not a perfect team. But one of the things that Green Bay has done very well with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, they draft the offensive line well, and they coach up offensive lines. They do a good job of developing offensive linemen, and Aaron Rodgers has only been sacked 4 times in the last 4 games. They went and got Billy Turner. They have drafted the position very well. So Aaron's got a nice offensive line. That's allowed, obviously, Aaron Jones to flourish. And by the way, what that does, it allows Aaron to more often throw on play action. So what does that do? Well, Aaron Rodgers on play action has 103 passer rating and completes 73% of his throws. So Aaron's good anyway, but when you let Aaron throw on 2nd and 4 and 3rd and 2, linebackers have to play up. He is absolutely lethal. Green Bay at 5.
Number 4.
Houston Texans. Bill O'Brien got ripped for trading first-round picks for a left tackle. Guess what? Deshaun Watson doesn't get sacked anymore. Guess what? He's really good. Here's the other thing. This is a Deshaun Watson. This is very Russell Wilson. Houston leads the league in red zone touchdown percentage and third down percentage. What does that mean? Deshaun, like Russell Wilson, just makes plays. This is what I knock on Matt Stafford. Red zone, third down last night. Matt just doesn't make the play. Deshaun Watson right now, best in the league. Red zone touchdown percentage. Third down percentage, best in the league. That's just a guy making plays. 90% of this sport is off script. You know, the first two series are scripted. After that, you got to make stuff happen. Nobody makes it happen like him. And by the way, has not been sacked in 2 weeks. It's not a coincidence. The offense has scored 84 points in 2 weeks. Deshaun now has time when he prefers, as he's always said, to be a pocket quarterback.
Number three.
San Francisco 49ers, best defensive front in the league. What I thought was impressive about winning in Los Angeles, they were missing their fullback, who's a big component, a big cog in their offense, and both offensive tackles, and they were on the road, and the Rams were more desperate. So you can just say the Rams are no good, but that, you know, the wise guys in Vegas thought the Rams were one of the bets of the weekend. So they've allowed the second fewest sacks and the second fewest yards per game. So they're doing it on both sides. You're not getting to Garoppolo, and they're getting to your quarterback. And this league's not hard. Get a quarterback, protect him, and then draft guys that can get their quarterback and make him uncomfortable. So San Francisco goes into every game, and their quarterback is more comfortable than your quarterback. That's why they're number three.
Number two.
New Orleans Saints, it's really, we're talking about Bridgewater, it's really about line play. They're top 10 in the league in sacks, and top 10 in sacks allowed. Meaning, like San Francisco, they're doing a lot of this on the lines. Teddy Bridgewater's terrific. Bridgewater has essentially become Drew Brees. If you look at his numbers right now, what does Brees do? High completion percentage. What is Teddy Bridgewater? 69% completion percentage. What does Brees do? High passer rating, very few picks. Teddy Bridgewater, 7 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Very coachable, good line play. Saints at number two.
Number one.
New England Patriots. Yes, we know they've played the dregs of the NFL, but their special teams have been outstanding. The special teams and defense have scored more touchdowns than they have allowed this season. So their special teams are better than last year. Their defense is better than last year. They've got a ton of secondary and running back depth. N'Keal Harry comes off the IR soon, the rookie first-round wide receiver, which should help Edelman, Philip Dorsett, and Josh Gordon. 6-0, usually in September, they are at their weakest. They lead the league in takeaway, so it's not just about one thing. The running game's back in the fold, best quarterback in crisis, best coach in the league, special teams, New England number one. Herd hierarchy.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
With that, NBCSports.com via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Peter King joins us. Are you surprised at all? Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers seems to be working. Any surprises for you with Green Bay?
No, because I think Colin, I mean, the big surprise, obviously, is how seamlessly two huge free agents came in. You know, the Smiths, Za'Darius and Preston came in free agency and have totally changed the character and the personality of what had been a porous defense. That has been the biggest surprise to me about this team. You sort of knew that Aaron Rodgers, he heard the chatter on the outside quietly and privately. He's got some rabbit ears. He knows what people are saying about him. Well, could this be 35 years old? Decline of Aaron Rodgers? You know, he could not overcome some of the problems he had with Mike McCarthy. So is this it for his greatness? He had not been great, really, consistently great in a couple of years. So this was a big prove-it year for Aaron Rodgers. And I'll tell you, he made a couple of throws last night, especially the touchdown pass at the pylon that was absolutely... That, in its own way, was as lovely and as on target as Russell Wilson's throw, you know, in the corner of the end zone the previous week when he was under so much pressure. So I thought that was a great, great night, a great prove-it night for Aaron Rodgers, especially to overcome so many of the mistakes that his teammates made.
Yeah, I love watching games at Lambeau. Let's talk about the Saints. We said when Brees got hurt, we said actually on this show, Teddy Bridgewater is a little bit like a younger Drew Brees. High IQ, coachable, almost a savant learning quick playbooks, limited vertically, would rather pass but can move a little, and he's become that. Go back to the day Drew is hurt and Teddy takes over. Did he address the team? Because, man, it's been smooth.
Yeah, I wrote about that this week in my column. When that was the week, if you remember, when Brees got hurt, he gets hurt in L.A. And the Saints, because they were at Seattle the following week, decided that week that they were going to stay out on the West Coast rather than travel home and then go back. So they went up to Seattle, and on that first night in Seattle, Teddy Bridgewater invited the entire offensive team to a restaurant in Seattle. And he had Michael Thomas speak. They had a couple of people speak, a couple of teammates. And then he got up and he basically said, listen, I am not Drew Brees. I'm Teddy Bridgewater. I can't be Drew. But I'm going to do everything in my power to make everybody in this room proud of me. And I'm going to be a great teammate and we're going to win. And they're 4-0 since.
Yeah. No, and it also shows the line play there has been good. They get to the quarterback and they protect theirs. Line play in New Orleans. Mickey Loomis has done a very good job. The talent overall in this roster is really strong. Now, I'm going to go to two stories that I think are both ridiculous, but they're out there. The first one is Freddie Kitchens is on the hot seat. If he was fired, it would be the sixth coach in 7 years under the Jimmy Haslam, which I think is a terrible sign for the organization. It's toxic. I don't think you can get good staffs built. I'm not going to bring my wife and my family across country to Cleveland if I think I'm going to get 10 games. I don't think firing Freddie Kitchens is the answer. Do you think some of the talk now is legitimate, though?
I don't. But I do think this. This is a team that after its seventh game, I mean, barring one of the upsets of the year and of many years, Cleveland winning at New England after their bye this week, they're going to be 2-5. So they are going to have a major crisis on their hands. But I just don't see John Dorsey doing a panic move at that time, firing Freddie Kitchens. I just don't think he would do that. Now, if they believe Freddie Kitchens has lost control of the team, which I can tell you is not the case, if they believe that happens at some point, all bets are off. But I think Freddie Kitchens will make it through the year just fine.
Now, there's a Jason Garrett hot seat story. You know, I think it's pretty ridiculous. If they win Sunday, they're in first place. Even if they lose Sunday, they get a bye and get the Giants. Whereas Philadelphia, if they win Sunday, their schedule gets harder. So I don't buy this nonsense at all. But it's out there. And I do think Jerry's getting older. Jerry wants the ring again. I do think at the end of the year, Jason could be in trouble. But let's not talk today. Let's talk end of the year. Do you think he has to make the playoffs to retain his job?
At least.
Wow.
I would be very surprised if they go 9-7 and he doesn't make the playoffs. Now, Colin, just remember this. His contract is over at the end of the year, so they would have to sign him to a new contract. How in the world does Jerry Jones bring Jason Garrett back if they're 9-7 and don't make the playoffs after the Cowboys brass said at the start of the year, I'm not going to say the quote exactly, but it's something like, this is the best talent we've had since we won the Super Bowl. And so if that be the case, how do you justify in an okay division, but with two weak sisters, how do you justify bringing Jason Garrett back with a new contract? I don't think that would happen. I think that if Jason Garrett, if they make the playoffs, they win a game, maybe two, then Jason Garrett comes back. But yeah. I doubt if they don't make the playoffs, Jason Garrett has much of a chance at all to come back.
Yeah, by the way, Peter did not pick the Cowboys to make the playoffs. I had them at 9-7 battling for the final wild card spot. So Peter and I were not as high on the Cowboys. By the way, Vegas had them at 9 wins too. So I don't think they're underachieving to this point. I think they're achieving. I want to move to Kansas City. One of the great things about Russell Wilson and Brady this year and Rodgers, they've had to overcome the losses of receivers, offensive line issues. It's interesting, Peter. Patrick Mahomes, for the first time in his career now, is having to overcome, I lose a receiver, we got offensive line issues, quarterback is hard to play. And I think Patrick will be fine. But is there a little concern with you, not only defensively, but he's now completing 56% with Andy Reid, Travis Kelce in the last 3 weeks, that Patrick, at some level, has not done a great job overcoming what is known in the NFL as Sunday losses, roadblocks?
Colin, I would have zero worries about Patrick Mahomes. I'd have less than zero worries. There's two problems as I see it right now. Number one, Patrick Mahomes has an ankle injury. And even though he's not going to win a 40 against Tyreek Hill, part of his game, like Russell Wilson, is moving around in the pocket and instinctively making almost everybody miss. So that is an issue. The second issue is that their defense basically is allowing 5.3 yards per carry for opposing running backs and are getting killed in time of possession. So it's almost like every possession for Patrick Mahomes is vital. He's only got the ball for 22 minutes on average in each of their two losses. So think of that. Normally you'd have the ball, if you're the Chiefs, 31, 32, 33 minutes. They've got it for 10 minutes less in each of the last two games. They've lost both games. And there's also, to me, Colin, a little bit of a mental aspect of this. If you are Patrick Mahomes and you're Andy Reid, the play caller, and you know that you're going to have to take advantage of every possession because you don't know how many you're going to have, and you know your defense is a sieve, that's a little bit of a different approach than getting a 17-0 lead and just doing whatever you want when you get the ball on offense.
Yeah, that's a good point. Knowing, as he said, scarcity of possessions, you have to make the most of the possessions. I think it can change play calling and change the way you think. NBCSports.com, multiple-time sports writer of the year, Peter King, Football Morning in America. Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome, Colin.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I thought today we needed clarity on the officiating. So many of you are complaining about it, and I watched the game last night. I think it's a very difficult game to officiate. But with that, I want to go to the former vice president of officiating in the NFL to kind of create clarity for all of us, Mike Pereira via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So let's start with this. Am I overstating it by saying there's a little bit of an officiating crisis in the league with another layer, the pass interference review? We're adding a lot. It's like an airplane. We're adding more for the pilot to figure out in flight. Do we have a little bit of a crisis going on with officiating, Mike?
No, I think we have more than a little bit of a crisis, quite frankly, because if you're the pilot, I'm concerned about that plane, that it's going to crash at some point when it means most. And I'm speaking about the pass interference rule here. We've created a monster, and I hate to say it because it's put Al Riveron in an impossible position, even officials in a tough position, coaches in an even tougher position. And I think what the league did was overreact and brought in a rule change with making pass interference reviewable. And to me, it's all about one play. It's all about one play. And now all of a sudden you have two different standards of what is or what is not pass interference. You have the standards that the officials look for, and then you have the standard that replay looks for, which means that if they don't call defensive pass interference on the field, and Pat Shurmur challenges that Golden Tate was interfered with, and New York looks at it and says, yeah, really he was, but that doesn't rise to the level of what we're looking for in replay, everybody's going to be flummoxed. And so I think you've created more attention on officiating because of this rule. And if that happens in week 17 and keeps a team from getting into the playoffs because replay doesn't add pass interference, even though it is pass interference. If it happens in the playoff, it happens in the Super Bowl, it's going to be awful.
What is your initial reaction to the two calls against Trey Flowers of the Lions last night?
Well, I mean, look, I feel terrible about it, but they're so easy to call in slow motion when you're seeing them on TV. You have to realize that you can't go to the head or neck area when you're either rushing a blocker like that or pass protecting either way. And in fact, he wasn't the first one. He wasn't on the neck. He was on the collar. He was right here below the neck. Look at the difference. What's the difference from being on the neck to there? I can see what he called. And then the second one, you know, he's actually on the left shoulder, close to the neck, but off to the side. So easy to call in real time. But when you look at it in a flash, I mean, in real time, it's so hard to call. In a flash, I can see why it's called. And I feel bad about it. And I know that the umpire, who's a veteran, a 20-year vet, you know, feels bad about it. But it's pretty hard in real time to look at that and say it's an egregious miss. A miss, yes, but not an egregious miss.
I have a theory. It's called the umbrella rule. 2 minutes to go in a game, you can review anything. Is that just for 2 minutes left when another team doesn't have a chance to overcome it? Even in the Rams-Saints, the Rams did have chances to overcome it in overtime. The umbrella rule, the insurance policy, 2 minutes left. Nonsense or does it make sense?
Well, I wouldn't call it nonsense because I think what we have going on now is nonsense. So, to me, you should shorten the period of when you have like pass interference, even to the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Let's think back to that championship game. There was a blatant interference that was missed in the first quarter. Anybody talking about that? No. It's just because this happened at the end of the game and had a direct really impact on who won and lost the game. I wouldn't be opposed to your theory at all. I would worry a little bit about how time gets manipulated there, because if you are in a situation where a team is out of timeouts and then you stop games to look at something, you stop a game, but something that is not clear, somebody's going to gain an advantage. But I don't think you throw any idea out the window at this point. I think you just have to look at it. I'd be more inclined just to have replay, period, in the last 2 minutes of the first half and maybe the second half, because replay's grown so much into judgment, into what is a catch, no catch. You know, did he have the ball long enough to perform an act? Is pass interference? Is it egregious? Is it stuff? They're all in. It's getting so far into subjectivity right now that I personally would love to cut it to the most important part of the game. And maybe that's the last 2 minutes of the first half and 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. Maybe that's a better idea. I'm not giving up on you on this one. You might have something.
All right, finally, got a minute and a half left. I think college football has 8 officials. NFL has 7. They're not full-time. Many would subscribe to the theory that the NFL has never given the commitment to officiating it deserves. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but do you think the league has grown, technology has grown, television replays are so accurate here, you can see everything, that it is time that the league just spent more money on officiating, made the refs full-time? Is that reasonable?
I don't think making all the refs full-time. I think making the referees, the 16 referees full-time, 17 referees full-time, I think that's certainly something that could be looked at. But I agree with you. Look, at these guys are so important that they need to have more support. And, you know, there shouldn't be guys like me, honestly. Me and Blandino and McCauley and John Perry and Gene Steratore, all good people involved with the league, have left to the network.
That's
well,
right.
Why? Because A, it's more money and one-tenth the work, you know, so they don't, I shouldn't have said that in my option year. That was the wrong thing to say, but can you strike that back? You know, but I mean, they just don't appreciate as much officiating as much as they should. But I think they just have to look at changing the structure of what they're doing now.
No, I think, Mike, actually, we brought that up in a meeting this morning, that the reality is all these refs are leaving because the money's great. And, you know, there's a lot of stress officiating, not as much talking about it on TV. We got to run. Mike Pereira, Fox NFL rules analyst. He's the best doing this in the country. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Colin. See you.